died under the old law, in the law that he grew up learning and lived under and knew. And the issue and the question is, how did that law and Jesus' knowledge and so forth of that law, how did that affect Jesus in his teaching and so forth? So we began this particular part of our study looking at the law, and this is a pop quiz for you this morning, okay? So see how much you remember. We started in talking about this, in looking at the law and when it was given and under what circumstances, okay? So when the law was given, first of all, what context was the law given under? Anybody recall? What? Okay, but it's given under the context of a story, right? It's given under the context of the story of the Israelites being freed from Egyptian bondage. Now, the second question on this, okay, is specifically when was the law given, okay, in terms of this story of deliverance, when was the law given? Okay, it was after they were brought out of Egypt, not before. And that's significant because of what that says about the giving of the law in the context of this story of a relationship that God was establishing with the Israelite people. One thing we haven't really talked about a whole lot with this, but again, it goes back to understanding the story. When the Israelites went to Egypt, how did they go to Egypt?
Voluntarily.
Okay, they went voluntarily, but mainly they went there as a family, didn't they?
Yes.
Jacob's name had been changed to Israel, okay, but they were simply a family at that point. I think, if I remember correctly, somebody check me if I'm wrong here, I think it was something like 72 people, members of their family and so forth. So they went there as a family, but they left as a nation. You see? And it was the developing of that nation, and that part of the promise that God made to Abraham, wasn't it? That I will make your name great, and I will make you the father of many nations. Okay? And yet it's through Abraham's seed. And how many generations are we talking about here?
Wow,
400
years.
Well, I'm talking about from the time they went. Let me clarify that. When they went to Egypt, how many generations? Yeah, only three. Three generations. You see? So we're not really that far removed, are we, from the promises that God had made to Abraham concerning all of this when the Israelites went there to Egypt, which really is this story as it begins to unfold about the relationship that God is establishing. But then, again, keep in mind that it was after God brought this, not family, but nation out of bondage, you see, after he had already done that redeeming work, that he gives them the law. See? So again, it's not a matter of where God says, here's my law, I want you to keep it, and if you keep my law, then I'll save you. God saved them first and then said, okay, here's the law, I want you to keep it. Now, what does that really say then about the establishment of this law? Okay? As we've already said, the law then is based on the relationship that God had established with the Israelite people. So therefore, as we were discussing last time, the whole issue of obedience to the law, what is, when we understand that the law is based on this relationship, what does that do in terms of keeping the law and the idea of obeying the law? Exactly. And isn't that what Jesus then carried over from that into his teachings, you see, that keeping the law was equal to maintaining the relationship with God. So it wasn't just a matter of keeping laws for the sake of keeping laws and rules and fearing punishment, but it was for maintaining the relationship. The relationship from God's perspective is, you are my people, I'm your God, okay, and I love you, therefore I saved you. If you love me, you will keep my commands. Now, the commands, Jesus even says, they're not burdensome, but the commands are designed to do what? Yeah, build and enhance the relationship, you say. Remember a couple of weeks ago, as we were finishing up the class, I was talking with you about, and I used the analogy of the automobile manual that you get in your car when you buy a new car, right? You see? And the idea behind that manual is that the manufacturer who built the car knows best how that car should be taken care of in order for you to be able to get the best service out of the vehicle, right? Longest service, best, you know, and so forth. Well, it's the same thing with God. God is the creator. He's the manufacturer, right? And so he ought to know best how we would be able to get the best service out of life or out of the relationship that we have with him. And so when you understand the law in the context of the story and the relationship, then when Jesus says to his disciples, if you love me, you'll do what, Peggy? Keep my commands, right? You see? Doesn't that take on a different perspective then? Rather than I got a bunch of rules that I got to keep, and I don't know about you, but I've heard lots of people over the years, you know, will talk about in terms of, you know, becoming a Christian and, you know, that if I become a Christian, I got to, there's all these rules in the Bible you got to follow. Well, that just shows a complete misunderstanding of what the law is really all about, doesn't it? It's not about following rules. It's about maintaining the relationship and being able to get the most benefit out of the relationship that we have with Christ. Ray?
One of the things, like, you know, you do God when you taught the gospel according to John, and so many of the things you mentioned in that particular gospel is that the leader at that time was so dogmatic about all of this, about keeping the law.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they themselves weren't keeping the whole law.
Right, exactly.
They have added to things to the law, right, which made it complicated. And Jesus didn't come in for that.
Right.
He came to, he came for to obey the law, because he was born under the law. But, you know, that tells me that we have to keep the law of Christ.
Right.
If we want to please him. And we can't be adding John wrote that.
Right.
Also,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He had a chat from my word. But we have to be very careful.
And you're exactly right. If you go back and you look at through the gospel accounts, look at all the different confrontations that Jesus had with the religious leaders. Okay? What were most of those confrontations about? About the law, you know? Some kind of quote-unquote violation that they were accusing Jesus of, or his disciples, or what have you, about the law. Okay? And, of course, Jesus' perspective on that was what?
He didn't come to take it away. He came to fulfill,
the law, which is basically the salvation of mankind, right? As we talked about before, that's what that fulfilling the law is all about. But it's going back and saying, look, in fact, many, many times there was a particular word or term that Jesus used to describe the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, and what was it?
Hypocrites.
You hypocrites, you see. And he said at one particular point, well, did Esaias or Isaiah say of these people, they honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They're going through the motions, they're following the rules of the law, but their hearts are far from me. What does that mean? There's no relationship, you see. They're just following the rules. And that's not what God wants from us. You see? Right?
One of the things that bothered me in Theodore, when Christ healed a man on the Sabbath day, and they couldn't find nothing to do but criticize him instead of rejoicing for that man's recovery. That
right.
All they were trying to do is look at the Sabbath day, everything in the Sabbath day, this right. the Sabbath day, instead of rejoicing over what he did.
Right.
I think it was so terrible.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we were talking about in this motive part here that we began last week, and that's one of the examples that we look at that Jesus confronts them with, is them not understanding what the whole purpose of the Sabbath was all about. See, but let's now, as we were finishing up last week, we began this section that we're in now in talking about four different motive clauses. You remember us talking about that? These are the motives behind keeping the law. Okay, these are things that are actually within the law itself, statements or the way that these things are phrased that indicate to the Israelite people. Here's reasons why you should keep the law. Okay? And again, they come back to the issue of the relationship. The first one, which we talked about some last week, was that it is gratitude for what God has done. Okay? That's motivation number one. Gratitude for what God has done. In other words, when they were called to remember the things that God had done for them, which should motivate them in their treatment of others. Remember, we talked about specifically in the law that God pointed out to them how they were to treat the poor and how they were to treat strangers and aliens and so forth. Why? Because he said, that's what you were, you see? And so you remember what I did for you in treating you this way when you were in that position. That should motivate you then to treat the people amongst you the same way that I treated you. So that's the motivation behind giving that kind of law, you see. Remember what was done for you, and thus then you treat people accordingly. Now, when we looked at Jesus and this particular motivation, one of the best examples of that is the parable of the unmerciful servant. Remember, we were finishing up with that last week, that Jesus told that parable, which is a perfect example of this particular motivation. The one servant who owed the king this enormous amount that there's no way he could pay off, and the king forgives the debt, and then this servant goes out and finds a fellow servant that owes him a pittance amount, and he won't forgive him. And the king calls him back in and calls him to account. You see, and what did he say? You should have done what I did for you, you see. I forgave your debt, you should have done the same for your fellow servant. So Jesus then in that parable is taking that same idea, that same motivation concept that God had given to the Israelites, remember what was done for you and behave accordingly towards others. But Jesus in this parable makes it very clear that it is imperative, especially when it comes to the issue of forgiveness, that we are willing to forgive those who offend us. Okay? Because as he concludes this parable, he makes it very clear it is of necessity, because if you do not forgive those who offend you, then what's going to happen? You will not be forgiven. In fact, he says, throw that wicked servant into prison, you say. And so Jesus is making it very clear that the expectation of the relationship with him is, if you belong to Christ, then you need to forgive others when they offend you, just as he forgave you of your sins. And if you withhold that forgiveness from someone, then forgiveness will be withheld from you, which then in turn does what to the relationship? It severs it, you see? So again, you see, keeping the law even as what Jesus is saying, is all about the relationship, isn't it? Okay? So let's talk about the second motivation clause here. And this is the assignment that I gave you last week, Peggy, was the idea of imitation of what God is like. And I asked you to spend a little bit of time doing what? Anybody remember? Okay, well, that was last week's assignment, Mike. Not very many people did that one either. But this was the idea of going back and looking at some of the scriptures and ideas of where we are called upon to be like Jesus, to be like Christ, okay? So this particular motivation, imitation of what God is like, and basically what it says is that what God had done for Israel served not only as motivation, as we saw in the first one, but also as a perfect model for doing these things. So in other words, you know, God is saying to the Israelite people, look, not only did you see me do this for you, okay, and that should motivate you to do likewise, but you follow my example and be like me, you see. So what we see within the law then is a concept that the Israelites had where their desire was to be like Yahweh. Okay? That was something that was found there. In fact, they were encouraged, and the phrase that was oftentimes used was, walk in the ways of. Okay? Walk in the ways of Jehovah. And sometimes that was contrasted with walking in the ways of others. Okay, for instance, let me get somebody to turn over to 2 Kings chapter 17 for us in verse 15. And let me get somebody else to go to Isaiah 53 and 6. Okay, who's going to read for us? I got three or four passages here. Who's going to do 2 Kings? Steve, you got that? Isaiah 2 Kings 15, 17 and verse 15. Isaiah 53 and verse 6. Okay, Judy? Psalm 1 and verse 1. Okay, Tom? And then Leviticus 19 and verse 2. Who's going to do that one? Okay, Lynette? Okay, so again, this phrase, walk in the ways of Jehovah, or contrasted with others. 2 Kings chapter 17 and verse 15.
And they rejected his statutes and his covenants that he had made with their fathers, and his testimonies which he had testified against them. They followed idols, became idolaters, and went after the nations who were all around them, concerning whom the Lord had charged them that they should not do like them.
Okay? So here's, you know, where God is finding fault with the Israelites, because they had done what? They had walked in the ways of the other nations, hadn't they? Rather than walking in the ways of God. So they were, instead of seeking to be like God and to follow after Him, they were seeking to be like the other nations around them. If you go back and you look at the Israelite nation, after Joshua dies, okay, and they're without a leader, they go through this time period of the judges, right?
Yeah.
And they're faithful for a while, and then they fall away, and God oppresses them, allows them to be oppressed, and then they call out for deliverance. They go through this cycle over and over again. And finally, what is it that the Israelite people request? They want to have a king, and what is their reason for that? So we can be like all the other nations, to have a king over us. See? They wanted to be like all the other nations. And God's response was what? Yeah, you're not going to like what's going to happen. Here's how it's going to be. But he also, didn't he tell the prophet, he said, look, they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me as their king. See? So they were rejecting the relationship that they had with God as their king and as their God for the opportunity to be like all the other nations around them. See? How about over in Isaiah 53 and verse 6?
We all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all.
Okay, we've all turned to what? Our own way. See? Instead of God's way, say, we turn to our own way. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. See? How about Psalm 1 and verse 1? Who's got that? Okay, Tom?
Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, or stands in the path of sinners, or sits in the seat of the scornful.
Okay. Blessed is the man who does not walk where? In the counsel of the wicked, the sinners, the ungodly. See? Again, the contrast. Where does God want us to walk? With Him. See? With Him. David would later on write what? Your word is a lamp unto my feet. See? That is, that God has given us that owner's manual, okay, to do what? To light the path for where we are to be walking in the ways of the Lord. See? That's a part of the message that Israel had lost sight of. See? Again, because they were so focused, Ray, as you brought up earlier, it wasn't just, as we've talked about many times before, it wasn't just on the physical versus the spiritual, but it was also on the rules, you see, for keeping the rules. Now, out of fairness, okay, out of fairness, let's go back and review and make sure that we understand. The motive behind, especially the Pharisees in Jesus' day, the motive behind them being so stuck on keeping the rules was what? Exactly. You see, their history, they went back. Remember, we saw this earlier. You know, they go back in their history and they see how the Israelites had continually fallen away from God, and they didn't want that to happen again. So their motive was, okay, we need to make sure people don't, you know, quit obeying God's law and they don't become unfaithful. So we have this strict adherence to the law here so that people don't violate God's law and God gets mad at us again and punishes us like He did our fathers before us. So the motivation, at least that aspect of it, was good, right? All right. The problem became that was the total focus. See? Don't violate the law, because if you violate the law, then God will punish us. And they lost sight. And they were so concerned about keeping the law and not violating it, that remember we talked about the fences or the hedges that they built around the law, their traditions and so forth, that again, by the time Jesus came along, many of those confrontations had more to do with the traditions than they did with the actual laws themselves that they had built as this hedge around the law, all with the desire to make sure that people didn't violate the law, bringing thus God's wrath and judgment upon them. See? They lost sight of the relationship. See? The relationship aspect of all of that. They were not focusing on walking in the ways of God for the sake of walking in that relationship. They were concerned about walking in the ways of God so that they didn't get punished. Okay. Now, one of the things that's also interesting about this particular motive or this particular idea of walking in the ways of God really should carry us all the way back to the beginning in the Garden of Eden. We've talked about this many times before. the relationship, okay, that's the key here, that Adam and Eve had with God before sin came into the world. What was it? What kind of relationship did they have? Yeah, walking with God in the garden in the cool of the day relationship. You see? And that's what God wants. You see? And that's what reconciliation with God is all about, is to be back in that kind of a relationship with Him. Thus, the motivation for the laws and the rules is to be able to walk, not just to walk like God walked, but to walk with God. Therefore, there is, in this particular motivation, if you want to be like God, and that motivation is to behave like God behaved, then there's a certain requirement that is within the law, and that is concerning holiness. Okay? Who did I get to read Leviticus 19 and verse 2? Okay, Lynette, would you read that for us, please? So God calls upon the Israelite people to be what? Not just to be holy, but to be holy as I am holy. See? Be holy as I am holy. And what is that really saying? In other words, all of these behaviors, all of these quote-unquote rules that I have given to you, you are to do because they are holy responses to human situations. Now think about that a moment. Okay? All the different situations that the Israelites would encounter in their lives, and you go back and you read the law, and all of these specific rules and regulations that God had given them as to what they were supposed to do, you know, when we read those, what is our typical response to that? Reading all these rules and so forth. I sure am glad I'm living in the Christian age, right? You see, because I don't have to worry about if a garment gets mildew on it, what I do with it? I throw it away, you see? And I don't have to be unclean for the next 7 days and go through some ceremony to do that, okay? But they did. You see? All of these very specific rules, which, by the way, when you look at the laws concerning cleanliness, and there were all kinds of them, weren't there? You know, if this happened, then you were what? You were unclean. And in order to become clean again, you had to do this. What was the purpose of that? It's because of holiness. See? They were unclean, not in the sense of they fell in a mud hole and they got dirt on them. They were ceremonially unclean. In other words, they were not in a state of holiness where they could come before God. You see? And that's why the emphasis on that whole issue of being clean, because it spoke to the topic of holiness. Be holy as I am holy was what God wanted to be. God wanted them to be like Him in that regard, you see. So as they faced all these different circumstances and situations in their day-to-day lives, the rules that were imposed upon them were given as, again, that holy response to the situations that they were facing in life, even on an everyday kind of a basis. You are to behave this way because this is what I would do. And I am holy. That's kind of like the statement that God is making to them. You see? The reason for these things is because I am holy and I want you to be holy. You see? It's not, as many thought, and many still think today, was because God just dreamt up a whole bunch of rules and He wanted them to be able to jump through all these hoops in order to please Him. No. It was because of the relationship that God had already established with them. and he wanted to maintain. You see? Because I am holy, I want a holy relationship with you. And in order for that to happen, here's what needs to take place. You see? Jesus then was influenced by that same principle, wasn't he? In teaching that same kind of concept, to be or to imitate God. If you go to, well, let me ask you, how many did your homework? Anybody did your, Ray, what did you find out about imitating Jesus?
I tell you, that's a good thing if you can imitate
him. Okay. Okay.
And I'm going to tell you, that stuck with me. And we need to be Christ-like.
Absolutely.
Because that's the whole purpose for being, for coming. And that's the whole purpose for wanting us to be saved. We okay. need to be like Him.
Like Him. Absolutely.
And I found that to be very, 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 very good and informative.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
The Apostle Paul says, follow me as I follow Christ. See? Imitate me as I imitate Christ. See? When Jesus in his teachings emphasized this very same kind of principle here, this, look over in Matthew chapter 18. The whole issue of loving your neighbor as yourself, you see, it was a fundamental ethic or, you know, foundational teaching of the Old Testament holiness. Okay? Matthew chapter 18, verse 34. In anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debts. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother. How? From the heart. It speaks of the relationship. This is a basic fundamental teaching. You forgive others. Why? Because I forgave you. Do like I have done. Imitate me in your response to one another. And Jesus, he shared. Jesus actually shared the desire of the Pharisees for God's people to be holy. As we said a few moments ago, that's what they wanted. They wanted the people to do what was right. See, they understood, the Pharisees understood the concept of holiness, okay? And that's what drove them, you see. The problem is the application of it became fouled and so forth because they practiced holiness oftentimes by exclusion of those who failed to measure up, okay? That's why they wouldn't have anything to do with Samaritans and Gentiles and publicans and sinners. You see, again, look at the confrontations that they had with Jesus. Jesus, they concluded, couldn't have been the Messiah because he ate with publicans and sinners. You see? So their whole concept of practicing holiness was, okay, we're holy, we've got it, and you don't, so therefore we have to do what? We got to separate ourselves from those who are not holy. Okay? And that was much of their focus and emphasis, where Jesus rather emphasized holiness by imitative mercy towards others. In other words, you become holy by showing mercy to those who don't measure up. Why? Because that is more Christ-like or God-like. Rather than excluding and shunning those who don't measure up, you show mercy towards them. That's what God has done. See? Thus, we are then imitating Him. Okay, any thoughts on that particular motivation here? All right, we've got to have more time for this Bible class, all right? We just keep running out, all right? Any thoughts or comments on that particular motive? Keith? Okay. We're not finished yet, by the way. See, some of you are packing up your Bibles. I got five more minutes. Okay? I got five more minutes here.
The free will aspect comes into play because if we were in a bad way and God saved us, now He's done His part. Now
right.
He says, now, to keep you that way, it's on you.
Absolutely.
So now, it's up to us, and that's what we have free will. And some people are like, no, that's just too much to do.
Right.
And some folks say, no, okay, this is what God wants us to do, then this is what I'll do.
Absolutely.
And they tend to fall off that way. Well,
right.
It's on you then.
Right. Which, you're exactly right. And that goes, doesn't that go all the way back to the Passover?
Yeah.
What, you know, God says, okay, here's what I'm going to do to deliver you, but what did they have to do? Which was put the blood on the doorpost, right? Any house that didn't have the blood on the doorpost would not be delivered. Exactly. You see, it's a good point that you're making here. It's that choice that they had to make, and we have to make that choice also, you see, in responding to God in that way. You see, God says, yeah, I did my part. I'm doing my part here, but here's what you've got to do. But again, doesn't that, again, speak of the relationship? A relationship cannot be one-sided, can it? You see, a relationship cannot be one-sided. It's got to be two-sided. Okay, everybody in the relationship, you got two people in a relationship, both have to be participating. Okay? Because otherwise there's no relationship. I guess somebody could argue that they have a relationship with themselves, you know, that me, myself, and I kind of thing, but that's not quite what we're talking about, is it? You see? Stan, did you have your hand up a second ago?
Yeah, I was just thinking that it becomes much easier to serve someone or to serve with love in your heart. If not the thought that you're going to be rewarded in some manner or be paid for it, it's just like we talk about a job that we love to do.
Right.
It becomes much easier to do than someone that may pay you out the moon and you just hate what you're doing.
Right.
And
absolutely.
I think that was part of the Israelites' problem. They fought every day to try to keep the laws, and they hated what they were doing because
right.
they were restricted and many different ways,
right.
and they probably got very intimate, their animosity level was up,
right.
and so when they saw somebody that they thought was stepping out of line, they made sure they understood
right.
the law.
Yeah, and it's again comes back to that whole issue of the lack of the relationship. They were trying to keep the rules outside of the context of that relationship that God wanted to have with him in that way, and yeah, it's burdensome to do that, isn't it? See? Rick?
I'm
sorry.
Think our rewards are from, we get from something that's going to be love in return, not with the idea that you're going to get rewarded in some other manner. But when that love comes back to you, that's payment in itself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Rick?
That's why they wanted it too.
Yeah.
I don't want, you know, they don't get that. We want to be like everybody else.
Yeah. Well,
they wanted to be like the world.
And that's where we're going next on the motivation. That's the third motivation. We won't get into it today because we don't have enough time, but it's being different. Okay? Right. Judy?
Yeah. I've heard it taught, and even within the churches of Christ, that do not make friends with those who are outside of Christ.
Okay?
Or who are in a really bad, sinful situation. My point is, again, looking at Christ, where was he found?
Yeah.
Right? How can I teach or show Christ's love if I'm not associated or know these people and know right. how to interact with them, you know. And so I had to always strongly disagree, and I'm glad you brought all this up because it clarified a lot of things yeah. in my mind that I knew was there, but I kind of needed validation for
yeah.
that. And so this helped me a whole lot.
Okay.
All
right.
Because it is what it is. You know, you either follow Christ the way he did things, or you're going to hesitate and step back, and I don't know if I should be doing this. You know, either you commit it or you're not.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Well, again, you know, when you look at what Jesus did and how Jesus applied the law, because, again, keep in mind, Jesus lived and died under the law, under the old law, you see. And so he applied the law the way God intended for it to be applied, and that's why he ate with the publicans and sinners, you see, those that the religious leaders didn't want to have anything to do with. Why? Because they weren't holy like we are, you see. And if we, you know, sat back and did the same thing today, then who would we be trying to save? See? Ted? Absolutely. And one other thing that I want to finish up with this morning on this is, again, we're talking about motivation. Okay, when we are motivated by the fact of the relationship itself, okay, then what generally does that cause us to do or want to do in terms of other relationships? Okay. But don't we basically want to share that relationship with others? In other words, you know, okay, ladies, when you got engaged, what did you do? I got in trouble for doing this one time, you know, a long time ago. But, you know, you got that ring, that engagement ring, and you kind of all going around doing like this and, you know, kind of making sure that everybody saw that you were engaged, right? Because we get excited about great relationships, don't we? And when we're in a great relationship with someone, what do we typically do? We tell other people about it, don't we? I mean, think about Facebook today. You know, everybody wants to be friends with everybody. We want to tell, you know, it's that idea. Okay, that same motivation. When we're in relationship with Jesus, that should motivate us to do what? Share about that relationship with other people. Say, that should be a motivation for us. It's all about the relationship. That's what it's always been about. Say, when we get a handle on that more and more, then I think that we're going to be more apt to share that relationship with others. Okay? All right, next week we're going to talk about motivation number 3, being different. Okay? So that's